We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to a new series of the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Basildon Recorder, read by Catriona Young.
Traffic police have hailed their campaign against bad drivers a real success after stopping 270 motorists on the A127. The campaign was carried out by traffic officers from Rayleigh and Leyndon, and Inspector Steve Tutton of Leyndon Traffic said the message seems to be getting through. He added, "We stopped 270 drivers who were either advised or prosecuted. A high proportion of those stopped were for excess speed, while other offences included carless driving."
Speciality in Basildon. Anyway, thank you very much, Jane Pullen of Basildon, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and the editor of Private Eye, Ian Hislop. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and the journalist and broadcaster, Andrew Rawnsley. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from The Guardian, spotted by Andrew Park of Gwent.
England's team manager Keith Fletcher has appealed to the Indian authorities to take immediate steps to prevent a repeat of the crowd disturbances yesterday, which placed players on both sides at risk of serious injury. G.Y. Lely, joint secretary of the Indian Cricket Board of Control, blamed the disturbances on spectators trying to get themselves on television and also on the rough handling by stewards of a few spectators who ran onto the outfield. "People object to being beaten by volunteers rather than the police," he said. "We told the volunteers that if they wanted to beat someone, they should take them outside and do it." "We're taking this matter very seriously."
Thank you very much indeed. Richard, who didn't keep a check on who was getting all the credit?
This is a very difficult one to start with, isn't it? I think check. It must be something to do with
credit.
The BBC.
Check.
If it's to do with checks.
Checkland, Michael Checkland.
Checkland, Checkland, John Burt.
Being sacked, Burt's about to be... not that question
we're
yet.
We're coming round to the NatWest Bank.
You are, and you're coming
via
round.
Via John Burt. I'm not sure where he has his account. I don't think we've been told that as yet, but he looks to me like a NatWest man, wouldn't you say?
Well, he's got glasses, a bit dull.
Yes, yeah. Good sort of grey feel about him. Anyway, they made a balls up with their credit card system and paid a lot of money to people who...
Yeah, it's an elegant way of praising
it. It's got to be a first time ever, hasn't it? The bank's actually giving people money rather than just taking it.
This is the NatWest Bank, who managed to credit 15,000 customers' Visa accounts with 15,000 other customers' money and didn't seem to understand why so few of the lucky ones spotted the error. This mass movement of funds to all the wrong places was caused by a change in the design in the card hologram. The new one shows a little picture of a fat man falling off a yacht. The mistake is thought to have cost about £1 million, but the NatWest should soon get that back from the charges they'll make for writing the apology letters. Ian, your turn for a question. A difficult one, I'm afraid. Who's been given the best value entertainment for just £810 a year?
Oh, this is a toughie. It's the Bishop of Lewis, isn't it?
I think he's suffered enough.
This is John Burt, isn't it?
What are you asking him for? He doesn't know.
Well, he looks as though he might know. This is John Burt Enterprises Limited. Whatever he is now, who, the director general of this august broadcasting institution, who got into a spot of bother by, how can I put this tactfully? Trying to avoid paying any tax.
That's as tactful as you're going to get, I think.
And, it got revealed in the Indy, including his secretarial allowances and his going to the theatre in these Armani suits, and everyone said, well, this really is a full-time job, isn't it, running the BBC? Had enough?
Yes, I think we can just about get you out of jail for that.
News Quiz is in his wife's name. So we can come back next week.
It is the totally unwarranted attacks on the BBC Director General's handling of his tax affairs and employee status. Allegations denied by Mr. Burt, a man of impeccable character, doing a difficult job at Broadcasting House. It can't be easy commuting from Switzerland every day. Mr. Burt was quite within his rights to save a mere £810 in tax by claiming legitimate expenses for his wife, Mrs. J.B. Holdings Gibraltar Limited. His grandmother, Granny B's Offshore Trust Management. Grand Cayman, and her cat, Little Tiddles Liechtenstein, PLC. Mr. Burt defended his freelance status on the grounds that he came from a different world. The Centaurus, I think. Andrew, your question, and welcome back to the programme. The question is this, a mixed metaphor for you. If power corrupts, what should one do when in Rome?
Oh, I think we're here talking about the scenes in the Italian Parliament, which
indeed
we all had
a
good chuckle at until we saw last night our own parliamentarians putting on paper hats and throwing top hats about and that sort of thing. I can give you the technical explanation for the behaviour in both places, but I prefer the sociological one. This is obviously part of the rising tide in middle-aged delinquency amongst legislatures across Europe, and I blame the parents.
Yes, for not practising contraception. You're absolutely right, Andrew. This is the political scandal in Italy, which was highlighted by a parliamentary brawl amongst drunken senior politicians, or as they're tunefully known, high tiddly eye ties. And that's on page 5. You can imagine what comes later. Alan, your time for a question again. Listen to this. That was Food, Glorious Food from the musical Oliver. And your question is this, Alan. Whose defensive plan takes the biscuit?
This is a story I really didn't understand. Apparently, during the Cold War, Britain stored 200,000 tons of biscuits against a Russian invasion. Presumably, you're going to force the poor buggers to eat them. Righto, Ivan. Take that oval Marie. Get it down. You want my name's not Bernard Montgomery. I don't know what we're going to do with these biscuits, but apparently, when the bomb fell, we were going to go into our cellars and eat all these biscuits that the government was going to provide until such time as he could come out again and the Russians had gone. And now they're giving them to the Third World. We'll be very glad to have some 40-year-old biscuits from them.
Exactly.
Can you imagine the government planning that went into the deciding? There must have been a biscuit subcommittee. In Oh, I think you've had digestive. No, I rather like bourbon myself. Well, let's give the ordinary ones to the north of England. Okay. Wheaton down here, I think. I was up there with von Rundstedt. We're over here with the 13th, 21st Topic Wheatons.
It is the surprising news that Britain's top secret civil defence weapon for the last 50 years has been a stockpile of 200,000 tonnes of biscuits hidden in huge concrete bunkers decorated with pictures of Highland terriers in tartan ribbons. Mercifully, we've come to the end of the first round, and the scores are, as they always are this programme at this time, 4-4. Start round 2 with an item from the programme for Oxford's new chamber orchestra.
Beethoven, Symphony No. 7 in A Major, Opus 92. Pre-concert talk and discussion with the composer, King's Arms, 7 o'clock.
Well, thank you, Julian Woodward of Basingstoke, for sending us that cutting. Richard, who was knocked for 6 by a dressing down?
Well, I saw that old Gooch had been told to shave off his stubble, which I thought was probably a good thing to do. I mean, now they've lost all the matches. It was time to make a fresh start. This was the Dexter's solution. It was to say to Gooch, it's no good having that beard. So that's what's going to happen. Gooch will be beardless in future.
Good to see them addressing the problem.
I know. I thought it was high time they got out of this beard.
Because that's why England lost, you know.
I know.
Because he had his beard.
I know.
Nothing to do with being useless at batting. And pretty terrible at bowling. It was all beards and T-shirts.
I know.
That's the problem.
Exactly.
This was about the England cricket team whose poor performance in India was blamed on the shabby appearance of Graham Gooch, team captain. Or as he's known to Radio 3 listeners, Graham Gooch, out. Gooch was criticised by experts for his facial hair and was told he should play clean-shaven like the cricketers of old, like old silky, smooth, baby-faced W.G. Grace himself, the man who looked as if he'd gone into bat with his head on upside down. The trouble is, if Gucci gets a baby face, he's in danger of appearing in the batting order as Gucci Gucci Goo. I told you it would get worse before it got better. Ian, your question now. Where did Rebel Bill lead the Bill Rebels?
This is Maastricht. How incredibly dull. I certainly stayed up all night to watch the film on the other side. But apparently the government were defeated and Bill Cash was on the telly laughing.
You're absolutely right. It was the government's Maastricht defeat in the Commons when, after losing the support of Tory rebels led by Bill Cash, and despite gaining the support of the Scots and Welsh nationalists, Mr. Major was totally humiliated when a Liberal Democrat voted with him. Andrew, here's a piece of music for you.
We are the products of those homes serene and stately that only lately seem to have run to seed. The stately homes of England, how beautiful they stand, to prove the upper classes have still the upper hand.
Well, that was, of course, The Stately Homes of England by Noel Coward, and your question is, what ancient attractions are monumental failures?
Oh, yes, this was very interesting report by those wonderful people at the Consumer Association in their magazine, Which, that told us that some of our historic sites, like Stonehenge, are old-fashioned. correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the whole point about Stonehenge was that it was old-fashioned. But they said, to be slightly more serious about it, they said it wasn't just that Stonehenge itself was a bit on the old side, but the food was pretty ancient and the canteen facilities were prehistoric.
Isn't there already some massive Stonehenge experience next to it? This is your part of the world.
What they want to have is what everyone has now, is something called an information centre. You know, have you been to one of those?
No.
I don't know anything about stone. What kind of information centre is it? People go up and say, oh, the stone's gone. No idea.
No.
Oh, not the faintest.
But you'll
I'll
be able to...
Job. I would like to be the Stonehenge information officer. All there is to know about Stonehenge? Put it in your eye.
You'll be able to drive in and see a video of Stonehenge.
With Alan on it.
About Stonehenge, the lavatory is on the other side of the road and connects with Stonehenge by an underpass. I've been there myself. And it really is ridiculous because you're on one side of the road with all these wonderful things we're whittling against. But in short, you've got to run like a badger under the M1. All the way under the A, whatever it is, and up the other side to this lavatory where there are hundreds of Swedes queuing. You probably think that's what they've come to see. They go back to where it is, Stockholm, saying, I saw this wonderful lavatory. The funny thing on the other side of the road.
It is the Holiday Witch report that claims Stonehenge is dated. It's hardly surprising. Who gets anything out of old stones, apart from Mandy Smith, that is? The damming report... The damning report into Britain's top tourist sites also claims St. Paul's Cathedral is expensive. Just ask Prince Charles. He went there in 1981 and is still paying for his mistake today. Alan, your time for a question again. Who have been all at sea over net agreements?
Oh, dear. Well, this is the very sad one about the Cod Wars. And it's very strange. I mean, who would be a fish? Those that are caught and taken to France end up being thrown at gendarmes, and then those that are caught and taken to England are just chucked all over the dock. I mean, it's a very sad thing.
It is. It's no life for a fish.
No. I mean, it's no kind of a war, really. I mean, when I was a boy, 200,000 tons of biscuits behind us, you knew where you stood. These days, you've got nothing to face Jerry except half a stone of cod and a couple of crabs. But anyway, that's what they do. I mean, the current war is about going to this port or the other and throwing other people's fish about. Terrible.
Absolutely right, Alan. This refers to the escalation of the fish war marked by the promotion of Captain Birdseye to Rear Admiral, and more seriously, by Kate Adey buying a sou'wester. And the scores at the end of the second round are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with an item from the Kingston Guardian.
The Census Office has come clean on Outer London, and a detailed report shows that 99.7% of owner-occupied households have exclusive use of a bath or shower. 61% of households also have less than half a person in each room.
Thank you, Barry Eaton of New Malden. Sorry for that. Ian. Listen to this. That was unsurprisingly called Wide-Eyed and Legless by Andy Fairweather Lowe. Your question is, Ian, who took a stand and told the naked truth?
Oh, I was hoping this is the one about the Irish judge who was completely legless in the middle of the night. That was a terrific story. Banging on the hotel door.
Was it?
Saying, give us a drink. I've had a stressful week. Gosh, I sympathised with him. Especially when he was nicked.
They know this.
They know it.
The answer lies in Hollywood. Kim Basinger signed up to take this part in... What was it called?
It's called Boxing Helena.
Boxing Helena.
And they have to cut her legs and arms off. It's a funny thing to protest about, isn't it?
Well, anyway...
he's not much of a left to be naked.
After reflecting a couple of days on the script, she decided perhaps this wasn't such a tasteful part. And she also... The other part is the nakedness. I mean, Miss Basinger hasn't been shy in the past, but now she says she only does artistic nudity rather than gratuitous nudity. Of course, her appearance in Playboy was oh so terribly artistic, wasn't it? True on this programme, of course, Alan only ever does artistic nudity.
No. This is all about film actress Kim Basinger, or M. Basinger, or everyone like Kim Basinger, the thinking man's Virginia Bottomley, who is being sued for pulling out of a movie because the director refused to tone down the sex scenes. The film Boxing Helena called for her to play a woman whose limbs are amputated by a jealous surgeon. She's never had so many parts in just one film before. The mad doctor then keeps her prisoner in a small box. It's a sort of fatal attraction with product placement by Tupperware. Despite all this being done in the best possible taste, Miss Basinger felt the athletic love scenes were implausible. Playing a limbless torso. They sound downright impossible. Andrew, it's your turn again. Whose off days were numbered?
At this point, ladies and gentlemen, Alan Corrin is writing something
on this pad,
piece of paper.
What
can he say? Mr. Rawnsley is bending over it, trying to read it.
2 billion hours equals people off sick, but I'm sure Alan will put it into his own words much better than I can put his notepad into my words.
Well, as a result of presumably going to see doctors who cut their legs up and put them into cardboard boxes, there were 2 billion hours lost by people claiming sick benefit or going off sick.
This was a report into absenteeism that found British workers take 200 million days off sick every year, and that's just a couple of drivers on the Northern Line. Thank you, London listeners. These are the findings of Ms. Jean Balcombe, the Industrial Society's absentee expert, who got the job by failing to turn up for her interview. Unions have been shocked by the figures and are now pressing for a maximum 400,000-day week to fit them all in. But things could be much worse. Just imagine how much more absenteeism there'd be if we had full employment. Touch a bit of that, I thought. Alan, your turn. Why has Sir said no to a testing time?
Well, it's all about teachers not wanting to test children in case it's discovered that they're inadequate. Yes, and the children might not be doing so well either. they're going to be tests every 10 minutes for children. They're not going to have them anymore, and they want to have a strike and go home and add to the 2 billion hours a week.
It's Nazut, the teaching union and popular Eskimo surname, which has voted to boycott pilot tests for school children. Thank goodness for that. Who wants 7-year-old pilots? A union spokesman claimed the boycott would allow their overworked members to concentrate on the profession's most important task, that is, making arrangements to fill their 3 months annual holiday. The result of the vote was delayed because anyone with an untidy ballot paper was kept behind and made to do it again. Later, chaos broke out when they asked for a show of hands instead, and the entire union membership was excused to go to the toilet. And the scores at the end of the third round have changed dramatically, because while Richard and Ian have stoically clung to 8... Alan and Andrew have leapt into the lead with 14. Before we start the final round, the following item was spotted in the Daily Mirror.
Stunning Sharon Stone flashes a thigh as she steps from a private jet and leaves watchers wondering if she's wearing anything else under that sexily slashed dress. The scene is an echo of the Hollywood star's big tease in her hit murder movie Basic Instinct, in which she was grilled by police wearing no knickers.
Yes, well, thank you, Tom Ashworth of Scunthorpe, South Humberside, for that. Richard, listen to this.
Control, this is 6-7 here. I can hear you loud and I can hear you clear.
Good morning, 6-7. Good morning. Bit of a life start, isn't it?
This is something that you want me to do. Yeah.
Yes, we have a job for you.
No, I'm only here to please you.
We want you to pick up a young lady at 83 Royal Gardens.
Well, that was Car 67 by Driver 67. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, who gave himself a Philip with a hackneyed form of transport?
I thought that was a reference to this forthcoming rave in the nave it's going to take place in Winchester Cathedral. However,
what sort of rave is it going to be?
Well, that sort of music is going to be played very, very loudly, and all the stained glass windows will be smashed by the noise. They're all looking forward to that. The bishop's very keen on it.
A lot of young chaps going to be there?
Yes, yes. We're all going to see the face of God in rock music today. However, the real answer to this is to do with our old friend, the Duke of Edinburgh, who is very keen on saving wildlife, isn't he?
That's right.
And for this purpose, he's bought a taxi. I'm not quite sure...
He's actually bought a taxi so he can now deliver his opinions in the safety of a cab.
That's right.
He's going to wander around London going, bloody hell, string him up, honestly. See those slitty eyes? I give them a bad time. No, honestly, I've had the Queen in the back.
Yes, absolutely right. And in other ways, the prince is well qualified. He always stops whenever he sees a zebra crossing so that he can get a decent shot at it. He knows one shouldn't really shoot wildlife, but hanging's too good for him. He knows all the right-hand signals, and, of course, just like her indoors, he never carries any change. Ian, your question now. Who left his flock with indecent haste? Try to be tasteful. On one side of the paper only.
Don't you think he's suffered enough?
Anyway, there's some old bishop and monk who's been fiddling about with novices and got caught.
This is the Bishop of Gloucester who resigned after being found guilty of getting into the Abbey habit, as it were. The Right Reverend Peter Ball blamed his unique interpretation of the laying on of hands on increasing stress at work. Keep going, Kitty. Wait till you... This is the next one, mate.
Swinging senses.
No.
Oh, dear.
Frocked, is it?
No, we haven't got that yet.
There was an old Bishop of Gloucester, have you?
Shut up! Meanwhile, the novice monk has put the incident behind him and has reaffirmed his vows of appeal.
Pull yourself together.
Like round the horn all over again. Anything you say sounds filthy. Reaffirmed his vows of obedience, poverty, and jujitsu. Andrew, what has been given one's blessing?
The Radio 1, we're still on this this religious theme.
That's right.
But this is far more tasteful. Yes.
It is.
The Holy One, as they're going to call a new strand of broadcasting, which will feature things like Heretic of the Day, I think.
That's right.
I read somewhere, and Defrocked Bishop of the Month.
Tax Fiddler on the Roof.
I just want to make it very clear that I haven't cracked a single joke about John Burt for the duration of this programme, because I want to work for the BBC again.
It's going to be lonely. It's going
to be yes. The Big Holy One. Radio One's new religious magazine programme, a sort of All Right Pope Pickers. Godsot was the idea of Director General St. John of Burt, the patron saint of invisible secretaries, and wearer of Armani sackcloth. The first broadcast exposes the link between Satanism and rock and roll when Cliff Richard's bachelor boy is played backwards to reveal the message, Thard a herd is a handmaiden of Beelzebub. Alan, what's no longer cooped up after foul play?
I've no idea.
Oh, well, it is the suspected kidnapping of one of the world's rarest and most valuable chickens.
How do they know? Well, how do you define a rare chicken?
Well, it's pretty rare because police fear that it's ended its days on a plate with a portion of the world's rarest chips.
Is it the one Dudley Moore's looking for?
Could be. It is actually a green and black Brahmaha, known as Blackie by its owner, or Lunch to its captor, who is one of the only two in the world. But there is some good news. The other one's even rarer and more valuable now. Dear me. What a shame. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Richard, have you managed to bring us a cutting?
A little musical item here from the Southern Evening Echo. It says, Ian, not my colleague, I hasten to say, specialises in coaching those with little musical skill and works closely with the likes of Hal Prince, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Adam Faith, Bonnie Langford and Sarah Brightman.
Has work cut out. Ian. Our Ian.
From the Mid Wales Journal. After a long battle with the County Highways Authority, Prestine and Norton Town Council has succeeded in having a stile on the Orlais footpath replaced by Kissing Gate. Town Mayor Councillor Eddie Taylor welcomed the news on the grounds that this alteration would be a boon to the elderly and the infirm, who find themselves in difficulty with stiles when trying to get a leg over.
Very good. Andrew?
With our current obsession about law and disorder, this is a topical clipping from The Times. It reports a police operation against domestic burglaries in London has led to action against 1,242 suspects since June. Detective Inspector Jonathan Shatford, second in command of the investigation, said one 13-year-old was alleged to have committed five burglaries on his way to a court appearance.
Thank you, Andrew. Alan.
I have a New Zealand one.
Oh, it's nice.
The Rarotonga Advertiser.
Good heavens.
It says, the South Pilling Fire Brigade, which has been late for every fire in the last 7 years, is seeking suggestions as to what could be going wrong. If you have any ideas, please ring up the Fire Brigade at South Pilling on 674-21-865-992-487-164. For extension 778.
Well, thank you all. And now let's look at the final score, which is Richard and Ian have come on a treat because they're 12, but Alan and Andrew held their lead and are 16 and this week's winners. Well done, chaps. Well, before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Times, sent in by Tony Bagnall of Pensby.
Sean Levers, 27, of Snainton, Nottingham, was bound over to keep the peace after trying to tug off the beard of a policeman whom he accused of being Jeremy Beadle.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingram, Simon Corran, Ian Hislop and Andrew Rawnsley. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Louise Coates.